On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
You know what's fascinating? Watching an infant, like a two-year-old, play with bubble wrap. Oh my God. They just love that stuff. It's like they found utopia. And adults, too. You know what I'm talking about with the bubble wrap, don't you? Don't argue with me. That's that sheet of plastic with air bubbles in it. And human beings just sit there for hours doing nothing but popping the little plastic bubbles. Sometimes in lateral succession, sometimes randomly on the sheet of bubble wrap. But we're fascinated by this. Look, there's air in the plastic and I can pop it. I don't know if it's the action of popping the air bubble or the sound of it, but we're mesmerized by it. And children, don't even bother them when they're doing that. They'll smack you. They're so involved. Me, I never got into it too much. Yeah, I'll pop a couple of air bubbles there in the bubble wrap. You know, maybe I'll do five or six, but it's like a bag of potato chips. I have the ability to stop after five or six bags of potato chips. But yeah, I'm not obsessive in that manner. Okay, that's enough. Go to bed.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
That's enough. That'll be enough.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I open up a show with a thing about bubble wrap.
Whatever.
Wow. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I think. I'm not sure now.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. I've got one question for you.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
You know, I was at a restaurant yesterday, because every once in a while I eat. And I was sitting there, and I see these two young ladies. I would say they were in their mid-20s, if that. They walk into the restaurant, it's lunchtime, they're looking to have, you know, a couple of glasses of wine, and talk about people behind their back, maybe after 5 minutes then go to the bathroom together, that kind of thing. And by the way, that's what the Me Too movement means. When two young girls are sitting at a table in a restaurant and one says, I have to go to the bathroom, and the other one says, Me Too. That's what the movement is. That's the Me Too movement. Many people don't understand that. People who don't play with bubble wrap, they don't get it either. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching these two young ladies, attractive, I must say. I must say it. I'm bound by law to say it. I'm a mandated court reporter. These two girls come walking in, and they're walking toward the table, and my immediate reaction was not, oh, they are incredibly beautiful. Oh, they are two young girls having a good time. My immediate reaction is, oh my God, they're both wearing white pants. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? My immediate concern was the fact that these young girls were wearing white pants. And I'll tell you why. Because nobody else at that moment in the entire world were wearing white pants, much less two young girls walking into a restaurant, both wearing white pants. I don't think they called each other up in the morning and said, "What are you wearing, Betty? Are you going to wear white pants?"
"Yes, how about you? Why don't you wear your white pants, too?"
"Oh, dare we?"
Me too. Me too movement.
So they're walking into the restaurant. They're wearing the white pants. And this is an Italian restaurant. My immediate thought is, oh, my God, you're going to get spaghetti sauce or meat sauce all over your lovely white pants. Or you're going to sit down in these dirty restaurant chairs and you're going to get, like, dirt on your white pant bum. My concern was for their white pants safety. And then I realized as they sat down that there's something wrong with me. obviously something wrong with me. But I do understand that men can't wear white pants unless you're playing tennis. Even then, you know, seriously. But you never see a couple of men walking into a restaurant wearing white pants. Are you serious? You don't even see one guy walking in wearing white pants. Men don't look great in white pants. And even if they did, men are just too dirty to wear white pants. There's no way a man couldn't. I'm not profiling sexually other than to say men really are way too sloppy to wear white pants. But somehow women have this dirt bubble around them where if they're wearing white pants, nothing can penetrate the white pant radius. You can spill spaghetti sauce on the white pants and it will not be there. There's just something about girls wearing white pants it's taboo. You can't, nothing shall spill on it. So I'm sitting there, I'm having my lunch, I'm taking it easy. They get up, they go to the bathroom together, as I alluded to. Their white pants are perfectly clean and pristine. And I thought to myself, is this a religious thing? Did God create woman with the ability to wear white pants? I think so. I think it's in the Bible under Genesis, chapter 6, volume 3, line 17, word number 7. And she shall wear white pants unto us. It's in there. I think I saw that. I was in a hotel room, and there was a Bible in the drawer. And when I opened up the good book, it went to that passage about how women wear white pants in the Bible. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Do you ever wear white pants? I don't think so. I don't think you did. I think you probably put white pants on thinking you were going to wear white pants. And then before you even closed the closet door, you said to yourself, no. No, this is too risky. This is... First of all, I don't look good in white pants. White pants pretty much say, here's my crotch, stare at it. White pants is like you're about to show a motion picture on a white sheet. You know, it's too much, especially for somebody like me. If you wear white pants, whether you're male or female down the street, my eyes are just going to go right toward you. They're going to go right toward you and, ooh. A human being decided at some point today to wear white pants. It's incredible. Do you ever wear white pants? Oh! No, huh? I'm all right. Sorry. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary, can wear white pants because if you thought she was wearing white pants, she would just deny it and saying, well, they're not white. So, yeah, she can get away with it. She's got this great ability just to turn anything you say around to the point where you're stupid. You're just stupid. I'm smart and you're stupid. Sarah. The world loves you. Oh, I guess they don't. Sorry. Yeah, not good. You got problems, honey. You got problems. Huckabee.
Yeah. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, winner of every international and global podcasting award Ron has given himself. He writes them in crayon, on construction paper. It's actually kind of cute.
I am kind of cute in a bizarre manner. You know, if you want to give yourself an award like World's Greatest Dad or Best Bowler, Bowling or Bowlier, all you got to do is like go online and find a trophy store and they'll give you a trophy and make a plaque on it that says you climb Mount Everest, for example. They'll have a little plastic trophy with a mountain on it, or you can get the real gold type that just costs more money. And they'll make up a plaque that says you scaled Mount Everest or you scaled your teeth, whatever the case may be, and you put it on a bookshelf, and you're good. Why wait for someone to give you an award for something? Give it to yourself. Have it made up. That's what businesses and companies do. There's like trophy companies. You know, do it. Do it. Come on. If you don't do it, then you're stupid. You probably don't even have a bookcase to put the trophy on, do you? Well, Ron, I have a mantle over my fireplace. Well, that's a little too much. That's like in your face. No, it belongs on a bookshelf. Even if you don't read, buy a bookshelf. You can get it probably, you know, at Walmart or something, like for $50. Put it against a wall, which is where bookshelves really should be. Standing in the middle of the room is not a great place for a bookshelf. Throw it up against a wall. Get some books. Doesn't even matter what the books are. No one cares. No one looks at all the books and says, oh, this is what Ron reads. No, they just see that you have a lot of books and that you read stuff. But somewhere within those books, buy yourself a trophy. You know, give yourself a trophy for something that you think you do well. Could take some thought sometimes. And, you know, put a display on the bookshelf. You know, that's all. That's all. Then somebody someday is going to walk up to your bookshelf and go, oh my God, you scaled Mount Everest? And you respond by saying, well, there's a trophy there, isn't there? That's all. That's all. Because everybody knows that when you scale Mount Everest, when you get to the bottom, there's a trophy shop. And they say, congratulations for scaling Mount Everest. Here's your trophy. That's what they do. That's the business. It's like taking a picture. They give you a trophy. You know that, don't you? Just like swimming the English Channel between France and England. There's a channel. I don't know what channel it is. I think it's Channel 6. If you swim the channel, you get to the end, you arrive in France, you get out of the water, they give you a trophy, and you put it on your bookshelf. It's very, very simple. It's not a big deal. I know you'd rather play with bubble wrap, but that's not the way it necessarily works. By the way, did you know that Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani both have been married three times? Three times. They've both been married three times. These are people that make wonderful, responsible decisions in their life.
Hi, I'm Steve Miller. I've been a trial lawyer in Florida and Massachusetts since 1985. If you and your spouse hate each other like poison and want to get out of the hellhole you call a marriage, you've come to the right place. Look, you can waste your money screwing around with some paper pusher paralegal type, give thousands of dollars to some piece of crap three-piece suit downtown, blow your brains out trying to figure out why you wasted $25 on the crappy forms you bought from the illiterate boob at the courthouse, or do what I say and do it now. We know what we're doing here. Look at this website, a work of art. Here's the story. Pay us a little and we get you a lot. Don't worry about the details. We'll take care of business and let you know when to crack open the champagne. Okay, time to move on. Go to the Get the Divorce page in the upper right corner, pay up, and you're on your way to getting rid of that vermin you call a spouse. We're here to help. Divorce EZ, a Florida law firm.
Divorce EZ. Now, you might think, Ron, that's one of your funny comedy commercials, you low-life little scum. But no, it's not. That's a real Rhode Island law firm commercial. It's true. I mean, I couldn't make that up if I wanted to. I don't want to, and I didn't. That was real. That just shows you the amount of love that is in the room right now. It's incredible, isn't it? Anybody, please, anybody.
Anybody, find me somebody to love.
Each morning I get out my dial. Can't barely stand on my feet.
Take a look, take at yourself in the mirror and cry.
What about your daddy? I have spent all my years in believing you, but I just can't
get no relief.
Lord, somebody,
somebody,
ooh, somebody,
somebody.
Can anybody find me
somebody to love?
Here's the scary thing. I really don't want to go here, but what the hell. I'm just scared by the fact that the President of the United States, that guy, that Trump guy, he like hired his entire family to go to the White House with him, and he gave them jobs, and his whole family's running the country. And before that, they weren't. It's just odd to me. He hires his son to have a White House cabinet position, Donald Trump Jr. Wonder where that name came from. He hires his daughter in a White House position. These are salaries. He hires his daughter's husband, Jared Kushner, as a foreign relations advisor. What kind of crap is this? These people who have no experience in what they were hired to do. That's like saying, oh my God, I have a leak in my bathroom. There's water all over the floor. It's causing damage. Let me call a baker. Let me call somebody in the bakery. What are you doing? And we just sit back and we say, well, whatever. You got to remember something. The guy in the White House that thinks he runs the world and is the dictator and the king is somebody that we chose to represent us. And in a Donald Trump kind of world, really, most of us should be standing up and saying, I'm sorry, Don, we hired you for the position. It's not working out. It turned out that we don't really, you're kind of an asshole. So we're firing you.
Well, you can't fire me.
Why not? We hired you. Why can't we fire you?
You can't fire me for 4 years. By then, I can screw you up really bad.
That's my impression of Donald Trump, and it was horrible because that's not the way he talks. I'm upset that in the Constitution, it doesn't say, you hired him, you can fire him. I really think we should be able to do that. I think we should pull him into a boardroom and say, Don, apparently this isn't working out. It's not so much your policies which suck. We can live with that. We've lived with sucky policies before. It's you, Don. You're just like a unabbreviated asshole is what you are. So, because of that, and you can't get along with anybody, you insult everybody you see, you bully them, you threaten them, you call them names, you actually don't say things, you shut up when things are getting a little rough for you, but you won't shut up when you can tweet with your fingers. You say racist things. You don't defend the people that want to be defended. You just stand there and say what you can do. as king, you constantly are annoying. You're fired. You're fired, Don. You can't fire me. As a matter of fact, Rudy Giuliani, or Unruly Giuliani, actually says that the president, if he wants to, can assassinate James Comey, the FBI director, could have shot him, and the president would still be untouchable. You couldn't do anything about it. He can't be arrested or indicted or anything like that, even if he shot James Comey. First of all, why even start with first of all? There is no first of all. That's one of the major reasons you should be fired. Because you actually believe that. You actually believe that. I don't know. Yeah, I know. We're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, we're going to speak to our guest for today. I guarantee you, it will be so fascinating you won't believe it. You'll probably email me and you'll say, Ron, this changed my life today. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. I have no idea. But one way or the other, it'll affect your life.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructose that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved piggy parts are 100% all natural salt preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved piggy part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original barbecue or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's preserved piggy parts.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi, good morning, Ron. How are you?
I'm great. Andrew Paolani joins us now. He's a director of public affairs for the Pharmaceutical Research Manufacturers of America. And we're
thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to have you here. We're talking about something that makes people feel a little bit more comfortable about things, and that's the advances in cancer therapy and the number of cancer survivors. I assume the survivors have increased over the years.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So we've seen a decrease in the number of deaths since the early 1990s by 26%. Today, we've got actually more than 15.5 million Americans who are surviving cancer. Of course, anyone diagnosed with cancer, it's incredibly scary, it's challenging, and there's a lot that goes through your mind. But I think what we're excited about today is this new report, which shows more than 1,100 medicines and vaccines in development to treat cancer, which right now is really an interesting time. We like to say it's a new era of medicine where things that were once considered science fiction are today a reality. So we're looking at new forms of treatment. We're looking at new forms of diagnostics, I should say. Mm-hmm. And we're also looking at personal therapies as well, which is providing incredible hope to patients.
Because I don't know if cancer itself is on the rise because of lifestyle or because we're now tagging it with a label, calling it cancer. I don't know which it is, but it's more of a concern by Americans, certainly, than it used to be.
You know, it really is. And, you know, one thing we know about cancer today is it's not just one type of disease. This is really hundreds, if not thousands, of diseases.
Yes.
So as we better understand what makes up cancer, I think physicians, patients, caregivers, and researchers from biopharmaceutical companies that we represent are getting a better sense of what this disease really is. And I think that that level of awareness is very helpful as we look towards preventative treatments as well as curative ones as well.
It's kind of interesting how almost every hospital has a division or some affiliation with a cancer institute and actually is a cancer care center. I've never seen that before. I mean, there's divisions all over the place now.
Yeah, and I think increasingly what's happening is, you know, biopharmaceutical companies that we represent recognize that while we are translating a lot of the basic research from academic centers, the National Institutes of Health, we recognize that we cannot do this alone. Cancer is too big of a challenge. So I think that's exactly what you're seeing. More of these partnerships, more collaborations with hospitals, and a recognition that we really need to do all of our part together.
Yeah. I guess the scariest part of it, and why I'm so excited about the advances, is that you would have treatment for the disease, but that treatment destroyed other cells and made things not great on the other end. And now we sit in a place where even the effects of the treatment can now be handled medically.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at sort of the old way of treating cancer with things like chemotherapy and radiation, of course, the reaction to the body was incredibly negative. Things like weight loss, hair loss, vomiting. And of course, all of those symptoms are really difficult for patients and their families to manage. What's hopeful is some of these new treatments, things like antibody drug conjugates, really are what we like to call smart bombs. And these are medicines that are targeted specifically to the tumor in many cases, and leaving healthy cells unharmed, which is really a paradigm shift that we haven't seen from the past. So it's an incredibly exciting time. And if we can treat cancer better and have less side effects, I think everyone wins.
Do pharmaceutical companies get involved in the testing for cancer?
Absolutely. Biopharmaceutical companies are involved really at all stages of research, from initial phase one clinical trials to finding out specific markers and better diagnostic tools to better detect cancer. And of course, we're also involved in the translation of science from the National Institutes of Health, academia, other research centers as well, because those institutions know that it really takes a biopharmaceutical company to translate that science and ultimately bring a medicine to market. Right now, we're seeing some really groundbreaking treatments come to market, and one that I would really point to is this new area of immuno-oncology. This is really where we are harnessing the body's own immune system, which, of course, is good at fighting off, you know, colds and viruses, but it's not so good at fighting off cancer. So with these new immuno-oncology medicines, we're really able to turn on the body's own immune system and fight cancer and leave those healthy cells left unharmed from the dangerous cancer. So things like those treatments, as well as personalized therapies, are really paving the way for a paradigm shift in how we treat and hopefully cure cancer.
And I hope the FDA is cooperating, because you can have these wonderful discoveries, but they don't hit the public fast enough sometimes.
I think what we're seeing right now is the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is really trying to make sure that we're moving towards a system which places safety and efficiency at a very high bar. They recognize that not only do patients benefit when we've got medicines coming to market faster, but also our healthcare ecosystem as well. By bringing medicines to market faster, we're also then moving down the road to generics faster, which, of course, is good for the cost conversation and making sure that patients can actually afford these treatments, which is incredibly important. So I think the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is really playing an important role in this, and they recognize the need to make sure we're getting these treatments to patients quickly.
I mean, I don't know what's more important than this subject matter. When you have the end of your life facing you because of a disease, I can't think of anything that's more consequential than that. I don't make a joke about it, but I always say that if I expire someday soon or something, on my tombstone, it'll say, they discovered the cure for cancer the next day. Here lies Ron. You know? So it's an urgency thing, too.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, time really is precious. And if you're a patient and you're diagnosed with something as scary as cancer, you want to make sure you've got the right treatment at the right time, because patients are waiting and time is precious. So we've got to move quickly. And I think that that's what gives us most hope about this new report. There's a lot of promise in the pipeline.
Give me a point where I can find more information, a place to go.
There's two resources. One is pharma.org. The second is our Go Boldly campaign. GoBoldly.com would encourage folks to check it out. Great resources, and really inspiring to see the biopharmaceutical researchers that are translating these new treatments and bringing them to patients. It's an incredibly exciting time.
Andrew, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You take care. Well, is there anything more important than that? Well, a couple of things, but your health, the health of your friends, your family members, your Facebook friends, your dentist's wife, all those people so much important to you. You know what I mean? We're out of time for today. There's a sale going on down at the dollar store. And it's like all items in a dollar store are 99 cents just for today. So that's a bargain. How do you have a sale at the dollar store? How does that work? I guess you don't ever. My favorite joke, which isn't really even funny, is to walk up to the cashier at the dollar store with any item that's on any shelf and say, "How much is this? Can I get a price check on this?" And they always say, "Sir, it's the dollar store. It's just a dollar." "Oh, because it's not marked." "Yeah, that's because everything in the store is a dollar. That's the idea of the place." "Oh, okay. How much would it be to have sex with you?" "A dollar." "Oh, okay." By the way, that's a joke that is not appropriate for anybody. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be with you again tomorrow, if I may. Until then, I wish you peace. Okay? Is that enough? You had enough? I know. I have too.